Welcome to the Voice of Truth on 103.3 WAJR-FM, the radio broadcast ministry of Christian Apostolic Church in Clarksburg, West Virginia. And now, your host, author, teacher, and pastor, Doug Joseph.
Did you know that the Bible has a romance book inside of it? I'll bet some of you didn't. It's called the Song of Solomon, and it is the Bible's romance book. Here at Christian Apostolic Church, one of our goals for all of the families in our community is for the marriages to be healthy, stable, strong, loving relationships. Not only that, but we desire that husbands and wives would have a great love for the Lord Jesus Christ. And to that end, we want to bring you some teaching on these two great love affairs, the love of you for your Lord and for your spouse, from the Bible's romance book, the Song of Solomon. But before we get into the teaching, we want to bring you a wonderful love song by Phillips, Craig, and Dean from their album entitled Let My Words Be Few. The name of this song is Pour My Love on You.
I don't know how to say exactly how I feel, and I can't begin to tell you what your love has meant. I'm lost for words. Is there a way to show the passion in my heart? Can I express how truly great I think you are, my dearest friend? Lord, this is my
After a few words of introduction, verse 2 begins what scholars recognize as what is called the first song within this book of songs. And then in the 8th verse of chapter 2 begins the second song. And then in the 6th verse of chapter 3 begins the third song. I want to direct your attention to the second song. And we're beginning there, reading, starting in Song of Solomon chapter 2 and verse 8. And one thing that can be very confusing for us as modern day Americans when we read it is that it does not have in ancient Jewish times, their language did not have the degree of punctuation, and it lacked the specificity that our current modern day punctuation has, and so it's very difficult to track when it changes speaker. Part of the time you're listening to her telling about her beloved, and then another time you're talking about him telling about his beloved, and then sometimes they're talking to one another, and sometimes they're talking to other people about their beloved, and this makes the flow difficult sometimes to understand. Remember, in the ancient world, there were essentially three different ages of Hebrew. There was Proto-Hebrew, in which their language had spoken vowels, but no written vowels of any kind. And then there was a period called Monarchic Hebrew, a Hebrew during the time of their period of kings, and a monarch, of course, a king, Monarchic Hebrew. And during this time, they introduced a rudimentary vowel system. It was not a full-blown vowel system. It was rudimentary. It mainly pertained to the endings of some words, the beginnings of some words. But it was only under a later time, when a period of Jewish scholars called the Masoretes created a full-blown vowel system for the Hebrew language. And that age of Hebrew is called Masoretic Hebrew. And so, when you talk about Proto-Hebrew or the original Hebrew, they had a language that was only consonants, and it was written with no spaces, no periods, no semicolons, no dashes, no commas, no quotation marks. And you have to really be a scholar, a scholar with great linguistic skill to translate it accurately. But we're reading in the Song of Solomon, and we're reading from the beginning of the second song, which is verse 8 of chapter 2. And it says this: "The voice of my beloved. Behold, he cometh leaping upon the mountains, skipping upon the hills." And in this language, pictographic language, it's depicting something like a deer or a hart that would have great agility to leap from one cliff to another and from one rock to another, being a very majestic and very beautiful creature. And the writing here, in a very pictographic fashion, she's describing her beloved as though he's this type of animal. Then it goes on with the comparison of a deer or a hart. "My beloved is like a roe or a young hart. Behold, he standeth behind our wall. He looketh forth at the windows, showing himself through the lattice. My beloved spake and said unto me, Rise up, my love, my fair one, and come away. For lo, the winter is past, the rain is over and gone. The flowers appear on the earth. The time of the singing of birds is come, and the voice of the turtle dove is heard in our land. The fig tree putteth forth her green figs, and the vines with the tender grape give a good smell. Arise, my love, my fair one, and come away. O my dove, thou art in the clefts of the rock, in the secret places of the stairs." And that reference to stairs is probably referring to a mountain pass that a deer could climb up into the mountains by. "Let me see thy countenance, let me hear thy voice, for sweet is thy voice, and thy countenance is comely," which means beautiful. And then verse 15, which is the verse I want to focus on, says this: "Take us the foxes, the little foxes that spoil the vines, for our vines have tender grapes. My beloved is mine, and I am his. He feedeth among the lilies until the day break, and the shadows flee away. Turn, my beloved, and be thou like a roe or a young hart upon the mountains of Bethair. And I want to ask you, behind the great wall of technology, hi, honey, would you switch to, oh, my dove, oh, my love, oh, my darling amongst thee? Would you switch that to the King, to the New International Version? And I want to read, this again from the New International Version. And let me read it to you from verse 8 in the New International Version. Give Sister Joseph just a moment to click the right buttons. Listen, it's as though she's talking to someone else about him. Listen, my lover, look, here he comes, leaping across the mountains, bounding over the hills. My lover is like a gazelle or a young stag. Look, there he stands behind our wall, gazing through the windows, peering through the lattice. My lover spoke and said to me, arise, my darling, my beautiful one, and come with me. Boy, people just don't talk like that anymore, do they? See, the winter is past, the rains are over and gone. Flowers appear on the earth, the season of singing has come. The cooing of doves is heard in our land. The fig tree forms its early fruit, the blossoming vines spread their fragrance. Arise, come, my darling, my beautiful one, come with me. Now, let me mention here, the writing here is a very beautiful and poetic way, and it is saying God gave us the beauty of nature to enhance our relationship of love to one another. And in this instance, all of these beautiful things, like a harvest of grapes from a vineyard, is a gift from God to help enhance our relationship of love to one another. And anything that would spoil that for us is an attack against our love relationship. Okay? And with that in mind, watch what it says then. My dove, in the clefts of the rock, in the hiding places on the mountainside, show me your face, let me hear your voice, for your voice is sweet and your face is lovely. Catch for us the foxes, the little foxes that ruin the vineyards, our vineyards that are in bloom. And the point here is, it's these little foxes that are spoiling this vineyard. And this vineyard was given to us by God to be an enhancement to our relationship of love. And these foxes, they're just a little one nipping here and a little one nipping there. But in the end, all of it comes together and it adds up. And eventually it adds up to, it ruins our vineyard. And that's an attack against our relationship. That's an attack against our love. And so, my lovely, my beautiful, my darling, catch for us those foxes, won't you? And stop them from doing that. And I want to speak to you for a few moments tonight on this topic, the little foxes. Catch for us the little foxes. Right now, the world is groaning underneath a curse. The world is groaning underneath a curse, the curse that creation suffers because of the sin of Adam and Eve. This curse affects everything. The curse not only affects things from a standpoint of things winding down and rusting and falling apart and wearing out due to Newton's second law of thermodynamics, but also the curse has affected even the very DNA and the genetic transference within animals. The scripture indicates to us very clearly that death did not occur in the earth until after Adam sinned. By one man's sin, death entered into the world. And the scriptures, when you study the scriptures and study the prophecies, it becomes very clear that when God reverses the curse on creation, and eventually he is going to reverse the curse on creation, and when he does that, the scriptures, the prophecies, promise us that creatures who would bite and devour us now will be herbivores and we'll be able to play with them then. I believe that Adam did not have to worry about mosquitoes biting him. Adam did not have to worry about a lion tearing him. He could walk right up to a lion and love on it and pet on it and give it a name and not have to worry about that lion turning on him and biting him or clawing him. I believe he could love on a bear. I believe he could love on the lion. And the scriptures prophesy that that day is coming again. Creatures, beasts that now in their cursed state are harmful to us and aggressive toward us and afraid of us. And if you notice the scriptures make very clear that there came a point in time after the curse had gone down so far and things had gotten down into such a bad state that God spoke and said, now the dread of you shall be upon every creature. Those creatures did not used to dread us. There was a time when Adam could have walked out and the birds and the butterflies would just come right up to him and the moths and whatnot. But now, if you see something, it wants to run from you. And it gets that whole fight or flight mentality. Am I going to have to bite him or am I going to be able to get away? It wasn't like that before. And there's coming a day when it won't be like that again. But do you understand that when God rested on the seventh day, in his divinely appointed will, he left the opportunity for Adam to not sin and for the day of entering into the rest to be a gateway into a permanent rest. God never meant for the rest to be one day and then no rest the next day after that. He meant for the day of rest to be an entering into a permanent rest. And it was because Adam sinned that the rest became just a symbol of rest on one day, and then it comes and then it goes, and we're back to work again. And so put yourself in Adam's shoes, if you can, in your mind. He gets up in the morning. There are oranges and bananas and grapes and apples and just whole orchards of fruits and kiwis and grapes and olives. And no disease is eating any of that fruit. No blight. There's no bacteria damaging the trees. There's no bacteria eating any of the fruit. It's just there for him and there for the animals. And now contrast that with our day. When we poison ourselves because the farmer is so desperate to keep from losing his livelihood that he has to spray chemicals on the crop to keep the insects away from it. And whereas it used to be that Adam would say, oh, come on, animals, there's plenty here, eat. You need to, come on, there's plenty here. I know you deer, you like this kind of fruit, or you like this kind of vegetable. Y'all come on and eat. Now it's, you better get out of my garden, you varmint. I'll shoot you. Because there's not enough to go around. And people starving and farmers working so hard to try to gather up a precious little harvest. And this animal and that animal and this insect and that disease and that bacteria tearing and clawing away at his harvest. It didn't used to be that way. And when you look at the love relationship between God and Adam and between God and when I say Adam, I don't just mean Adam as the man. I mean that as the family name. I mean God and the Adam family, him and his wife together. When you look at the love relationship there, that's the love relationship that is symbolized here in the Song of Solomon. In the Song of Solomon, the man in the love relationship, he not only typifies a Christian husband with the woman typifying a Christian wife, but the man typifies God with the woman typifying the church. The church is the bride of Christ. And God eventually is going to get us to the place to where he is going to take care of the little foxes. And if I read this right, it's most likely the woman who is talking to her love and saying, catch for us the foxes. The little foxes that spoil our vineyard. That is an attack on our relationship, and it weakens the wonderful environment that was a blessing given to us for our love relationship. But I want you to imagine with me for just a moment that it is the man. It is the man who is saying to the woman, won't you catch those foxes, those little foxes that are eating away at things here? And the truth of the matter is that in a Christian marriage, it goes both ways. You know, we don't talk with enough respect for one another. We don't speak to one another in these kinds of terms. Why not? It's because of the curse of the culture around us. We were raised in a culture that taught us disrespect, meanness, baseness, crudeness. till when we read something like this, it just sounds ludicrous. It just sounds wild. It sounds ridiculous. Why don't we talk to one another like this? What reason will we have for not speaking to one another with these kinds of terms of endearment? And can I tell you that the longer we go in our marriage, which has seen rocky days, but is a wonderful marriage and overall, we love one another now more than we ever did. And as we get older, we begin, and it's probably because of the Lord working on us, but we begin to gravitate toward saying these kind of things to one another. But I remember when we got married, Brother Billy Cole performed our marriage ceremony, and he had a beautiful marriage ceremony that he had written, and he said something like this: "Your love is like a garden. Always water your garden with tenderness and kind words, so that the flower of your love can bloom and blossom in the garden." Brother Billy Cole, he gave the same bit of marriage advice to every single couple that he ever married. And he said it in about this tone of voice: "Do not make your spouse the butt of your jokes." Sister Joseph and I took that to heart. And for all of our, we're starting on 23 now, won't we soon hear? Yeah. Well, we met on September 23rd, so we're completing 22 and fixing to start on 23. But in all of those years, there's been time that I've poked fun at this or that, but never her. There's been times I've maybe used some humor about somebody that I shouldn't have used, but never her. There's been times when I was angry and said things I shouldn't have, but it was never a joke that was making her the butt of the joke. And I'm thankful to say she's never made me the butt of her jokes. Never. In 22 years, never one time has she ever disparaged me by making me the butt of a joke. Brother Billy Cole taught us not to do that, and it has strengthened our marriage. It has affected how we speak to one another. It is true. It's true that catastrophe can damage a marriage. Adultery is a catastrophe. Okay? If you imagine a tree that represents your marriage, okay? Little things like making your spouse the butt of your jokes, that's like a disease that eats away the bark, okay? Adultery is like a chainsaw. It rips the marriage apart. It is true that catastrophes will destroy marriage. But what we have to realize is that the little foxes, they do spoil the vineyard. And the little attacks against a marriage can kill it just as dead as a catastrophe can. And oftentimes, it's not just an attack on the spouse that can damage the marriage. And in this instance, the request was not, "Catch these foxes that are biting me." No. It was, "Catch these foxes that are biting something that's connected to us." All right? So what is the vineyard? What is the vineyard that the little foxes are attacking? This can be just about anything in this type of symbolism. Your family finances are a vineyard. If you eat out too much, if you don't discipline yourself to shop at the store and cook food at home, and you spend too much money eating out, then eating out, that's little foxes that are destroying the vineyard that is your family finances. And money problems rank highest above all other problems in causing marital discord and in breaking up marriages. Catch for us the little foxes, won't you? And here's the thing. Somebody says, "Well, that's ridiculous. I won't do that unless it's a heaven or hell issue." I can't tell you it's a heaven or hell issue not to eat out too much. But I can tell you this. Her request wasn't based on the fact that if you don't catch these foxes, they're going to kill me. Her request was based on, we love one another, and because we love one another, I'm asking you to do this. And if you think about it, there are aspects of what God asks of us that are like that. When God asks you to do something, it's because He loves you, and He has your best interest at heart. And does he really have to make it a heaven or hell issue, or do you love him enough to catch those little foxes just because he asked? Brother Baron Claypool came to our house today to help me with a plumbing emergency. And actually, he didn't just help me, he did it. I just stood there and watched him. Thank God for Brother Claypool. He knows how to roof. He knows how to plumb. He knows construction. He knows how to auto mechanic. He just helped me with something just a few weeks ago, and then a few weeks before that, he helped me with something and helped me today. But was it yesterday morning, honey? Okay, our house was built in 1965, okay? 1965. And somewhere around the 1965, you know, circa that time period, somebody ran a water supply line for the main bathroom, and they buttoned it up with little clips to hold it in place down here in the basement, and they buttoned it up right against a cold air return. Now, Brother Bubby, it just so happened that that tin, you know, here's these floor joists, okay, and they've got tin nailed onto the bottom of those floor joists with the cold air traveling in between those floor joists, and it just so happened that that piece of tin right at the edge there, it was turned down just a little bit and formed just a little bit, had just a little bit of a burr on it and formed just a wee bit of a sharp edge there. And they put this copper supply line right up against it. 1965, okay? 10 years later, 1975, there's no problem. 10 years later, 1985, there's still no problem. 10 years later, 1995, there's still no problem. 10 years later, in 2005, there's no problem. But this year, we found out that during all of those years, every time someone would walk down the hall and there was just the least little bit of vibration, it was rubbing that copper pipe against that tin. Let's see. 75, 85, 95, 2005. 45 years. You talk about a slow saw job. It took 45 years to saw its way through that copper. Here's the thing. That copper would have held water from now till Jesus comes if it did not have some little fox sawing away at it. Somebody says, but this is such a small poison. This is such a small fox. This is such a tiny thing. It can't possibly be wrong. Folks, just because poison kills you slowly doesn't mean you're any less dead at the end. And so it was after 45 years of very slow sawing, it finally sawed all the way through.
Thank you for listening. You can reach us online at cac.us.com. Catch the Voice of Truth broadcast each Sunday morning at 11:30 right here on Talk Radio 103.3 WAJR-FM.